and those blind ones. A few minutes later, the entire bin is emptied, yet the woman in the jeans and skinny glasses still haven't found her shoes. "You stole them," she said, pointing at the pretty girl soldier with braces on her teeth. The soldier laughs. "You bitch, you can't take my shoes. You heard me? They're mine. I didn't take your dirty shoes. Now get back in line and get out." "Who took them then?" "I put them in your goddamn bin and now poof," she clicks her fingers. "Gone! Where are they?" "Only God knows, lady. Now get in line." "Don't give me that god shit. I want my shoes." "Take them," the soldier screams, hurling the strappy sandals at her. The girl lifts her glasses and examines the heels. Apparently satisfied, she slips them on. Once outside, she says, "First my land, now my Gucci's. God damn it." We sit on a bench in the bright sun and search for Baba. In a little while, he reappears and walks over to us with a bottle of water. I want to tell him stories about what just happened, but he says we have to be quiet in case they call our name so we can collect our bags and go. Mama hands me some cookies, which I inhale while black flies buzz around my face and eyes. All around us there are people, people hungry and tired, people waiting. Mama tries to talk to a woman next to her, but Mama's Palestinian dialect is shabby, and the woman is a peasant. Mama tries the Egyptian dialect, and another woman tells her to keep talking, like a movie star. Mama's embarrassed, and stops talking altogether, which suits Baba just fine. When the sun is halfway down in the sky, a soldier yells our name, and Baba crosses the yard and gets our bags from them. We then look for a taxi to take us to Baba's village, Jenin, and find a van of people who are going there too. I sit on Mama's lap this time, and Baba takes my sleeping brother. I watch the ponies as we drive by, the olive trees, the almond trees. I notice how neat the rows of trees are, small sprinklers shooting water at them, and green army jeeps that zoom past us. Baba's face looking like the sliced rocks in the mountain on our left. I'm so tired. I close my eyes, smell the lemony air, and bury my head in his shirt. That was the first part of Rhonda Gerard's Barefoot Bridge, as seen in the collection of stories, Katash, Short Stories by Palestinian Women, edited by Joe Glanville and published by Telegram. Let's move on to some more music. Here is Walla Forsa by Zayn.
such a friend.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Leslie, and this last part of the program, we're going to be reading poetry by Mahmoud Darwish. He was like the sweetheart of Palestinian literature, and the works that I've selected today are from a collection called A River Dies of Thirst. It was posthumously published, and these are manuscripts that survived a rampaging by the Israeli army of the Saka Kini Cultural Center in 2002 in Ramallah. At the cultural center, Darwish actually did a lot of his work there, and so these are works that were kind of salvaged from that trampling. This is a collection put together by Ruth Padell. All right, here's the first one, The Girl, The Scream. On the seashore is a girl, and the girl has a family. And the family has a house, and the house has two windows and a door. And in the sea is a warship having fun, catching promenaders on the seashore. 4, 5, 7, fall down on the sand. And the girl is saved for a while because a hazy hand, a divine hand of some sort, helps her. So she calls out, "Father, father, let's go home. The sea is not for people like us." Her father doesn't answer. Laid out on his shadow, windward of the sunset, blood in the palm trees, blood in the clouds. Her voice carries her higher and further than the seashore. She screams at night over the land. The echo has no echo, so she becomes the endless scream and the breaking news, which was no longer breaking news when the aircraft returned to bomb a house with two windows and a door. Here's one called The House as Casualty. In 1 minute, the entire life of a house is ended. The house as casualty is also mass murder, even if it is empty of its inhabitants. A mass grave of raw materials intended to build a structure with meaning, or a poem with no importance in time of war. The house as casualty is the severance of things from the relationships and from the names of feelings and from the need of tragedy to direct its eloquence at seeing into the life of the object. In every object, there is a being in pain, a memory of fingers, of a smell, an image. And houses are killed just like their inhabitants, and the memory of objects is killed. Stone, wood, glass, iron, cement, are scattered in broken fragments like living beings, and cotton, silk, linen, papers, books are torn into pieces like proscribed words. Plates, spoons, toys, records, taps, pipes, door handles, fridges, washing machines, flower vases, jars of olives and pickles, tinned food all break just like their owners. Salt, sugar, spices, boxes of matches, pills, contraceptives, antidepressants, strings of garlic, onions, tomatoes, dried okra, rice, and lentils are crushed into pieces just like their owners. Rent agreements, marriage documents, birth certificates, water and electricity bills, identity cards, passports, love letters are torn to shreds just like their owners' hearts. Photographs, toothbrushes, combs, cosmetics, shoes, underwear, sheets, towels fly in every direction like family secrets broadcast aloud in the devastation. All these things are a memory of the people who no longer have them and of the objects that no longer have the people. Destroyed in a minute. Our things die like us, but they are not buried with us. Here is one called Visible Music. When I listen to music gardens open out around me and the melody becomes a flower, I hear with my eyes. Sound has an image, and this image has a sound which slowly gathers momentum like waves, more far-reaching than any literary metaphor. Carnations leave their flower beds and are distributed on the tables of high-class restaurants to compensate a stranger for some forgotten loss, or make a diner waiting for his companion better prepared to face the uncertainties of their encounter. Nobody stops the narcissist, listening for hours to a song of joy in the water and believing it is a song of praise. When white lilies fill a room with their huge, pungent scent, I'm confused by my thoughts about them, the opposite of violets, which make me pause where 2 seconds intersect and dissolve, indistinguishable as the tears shed at weddings and funerals, and the opposite of anemones, which are content with a song on the broad margins, a pastoral on the low mountain slopes. All of this is so I can say the red rose is visible music, and jasmine is a message of longing from nobody to nobody. Here's a poem called My Imagination, a Faithful Hunting Dog. I was on my way to nowhere in particular, a gentle drizzle making me slightly damp, when an apple with no resemblance to Newton's apple fell on me from the clouds. I reached my hand to pick it up, and could neither feel nor see it. I stared up at the clouds, and saw tufts of cotton wool, driven northwards by the wind, away from the water tanks crouched on the roofs of the buildings. The light poured brightly down on the asphalt, spreading out gleefully in the absence of pedestrians and cars, and perhaps laughing at my uneven progress. Where is the apple that fell on me? I wondered. Maybe my imagination, which is independent from me, picked up and ran off with it. I said, I will follow it to the house where we live together in adjoining rooms. There, on the table, I found a sheet of paper, on which was written in green ink one line. An apple fell on me from the clouds, and I knew my imagination was a faithful hunting dog. Here's a poem called Green Flies. The scene is the same as before. Summer and sweat, and an imagination incapable of seeing beyond the horizon, and every day is better than tomorrow. But the dead are what's new. They're born every day, and when they're trying to sleep, death takes them away from their drowsiness into a sleep without dreams. It's not worth counting them. None of them asks for help from anyone. Voices search for words in the open country, and the echo comes back clearly, woundingly, there's nobody here. But there's somebody who says it's the killer's right to defend the killer instinct. While the dead say belatedly, it's the victim's right to defend his right to scream. A call to prayer rises to accompany the indistinguishable funerals. Coffins hastily raised in the air, hastily buried, no time to carry out the rites. More dead are arriving at speed from other raids, individually or in groups, or a whole family with no orphans or grieving parents left behind. The sky is leaden gray and the sea blue-gray, but the color of blood is hidden from the camera by swarms of green flies. The final one that I will share today is the titular poem of this collection by Mahmoud Darwish, collected by Ruth Bedell. This is A River Dies of Thirst. A river was here, and it had two banks, and a heavenly mother who nursed it on drops from the clouds. A small river moving slowly, descending from the mountain peaks, visiting villages and tents like a charming, lively guest, bringing oleander trees and date palms to the valley and laughing to the nocturnal revelers on its banks. Drink the milk of the clouds and water the horses and fly to Jerusalem and Damascus. Sometimes it sang, heroically, at others passionately. It was a river with two banks, and a heavenly mother who nursed it on drops from the clouds. But they kidnapped its mother, so it ran short of water and died, slowly, of thirst. And so that's it. That's all I'll be sharing today on the show from A River Dies of Thirst by Mahmoud Darwish and Katash by Joe Glanville. By the time that you're listening to this today, the Government of Canada would have yet again refused to call for a ceasefire to the bombardment of Gaza by the Israeli government. This is unfortunate and truly atrocious and unspeakably tragic. Of course, not only for us outsiders, but most importantly for the civilians of Gaza and those who love them throughout the world. My call for action to you is to please, if you have not already started, you can get started today. Please use every single civil liberty that you have to continue to talk about Gaza and to tell your local government officials that you will not stand for this. It is unacceptable for these atrocities to continue. And it is unacceptable for Canada to refuse to lift a finger to do anything to help the civilians of Gaza. Canada must call for a ceasefire immediately. Tell your government officials that. Call them. Email them. Do it the old-fashioned way. Write a letter. Please. And if you're able to show up to a protest, practice mindful, safer protesting. And do it. If you have the funds to contribute to a mutual aid for Gaza, do it. We are watching a textbook case of genocide happening before our very eyes, and our governments want to look away. That is unacceptable. Please, please, write to your government officials. Sign every single petition. Call them. Leave voicemails if you have to. But please, do not sit on your hands. Do not zip your lips. There is no complex issue in watching children, entire families, entire residences get wiped out by one of the world's most powerful armies. It's not a complex issue. For the oppressed, for the people of Palestine, please take action. Free Palestine. Check out more great CJSF programming. Speak up, listen up, act upon every Friday from 10 to 11 with your host, Charlotte Sister C. Farrell. 10 to 11 on Friday. Final music of the day. This is by this is a project called Minkum Oficum by Alquas, for sexual and gender diversity in Palestinian society. They're an organization in Jerusalem, you know, promoting conversations and awareness about sexual and gender pluralism in Palestine. And this is a part of their ongoing project called Singing Sexuality. They're taking music basically to engage with Palestinian youth, to have open discussions about queerness and transness and all that. Minkum Ofikum is their most recent project from 2020, and it's taking traditional Palestinian and Arabic music and giving them a queer twist. So there are four songs in this medley that I'm going to be sharing today. If you want to know more about the track listing of this medley and also more about Singing Sexuality and the work that Alquas does, you can look them up online. That's Alquas, Singing Sexuality, or wait for the episode to be uploaded next week, and you can find a link to their stuff in the show notes. And my hope for us is that the sorrow and the rage and the grief that we were holding on to will allow us to become even more hopeful for a brighter future. This has been Leslie for Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. I'll chat with you next week. Here's Minkum Ofikum by Alquas.
Wannabe? Tune in to The Arts Edge with Annie Roach, Saturdays from 6 to 7 p.m. and hear stories of artists and educators, writers, painters, actors, people from all walks of life. Hear how people are making their lives happen. You can find us at CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby Mountain. We're at TELUS HD Channel 7014. Or you can find us on the internet at www.cjsf.ca. Tune in to The Arts Edge and be inspired.